ya lo hace, pierna derecha, directo al arco, ¡golazo! ¡Golazo!
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Friday, January 18th, 2019. I'm Kevin Larame, joined by Dwayne Mullins, as always. To start the show today, one of our favorite Minnesotans is on the line to talk about Minnesota United and to talk about Major League Soccer. How you doing, Jeff Rauter?
Doing well. Thanks for having me.
Jeff, it's good to have you back. And I think that the reason I booked you for this week, above all else, is I think Minnesota is one of the most interesting teams this year. We've talked a lot about them having a hard and a soft launch. They've had the soft launch. It's time for the hard launch. Do you feel confident that they are set up and prepared to restart this franchise with the new stadium in a good way?
Well, they've certainly taken a couple of good steps. You alluded to Allianz Field, the new stadium, privately funded in the Midway area right between downtown Minneapolis and downtown St. Paul. It's a perfect location. It's a gorgeous stadium. I finally had a chance to walk through it last month now that it's about 99% complete. Just phenomenal facility. Like you alluded to, the last 2 years on the field have not been good enough. And you look at the first four players that the team's brought in, they've only added four players to date. Two in the super draft, Chase Gasper at the 15th overall pick and Dane St. Clair, who you're familiar with the 7th overall pick. But the midfield needed a tremendous amount of overhaul from last year. It was routine each and every single week how opponents would be able just to march right through the center of the park against Minnesota. Ozzie Alonso won't stand for that. Even if you get 25 games out of Ozzie Alonso, that goes such a long way to fortifying the center of the park and the locker room, a winning mentality, that kind of thing, for a historically inept first 2 years in MLS. Jan Gregu should be able to step in from FC Copenhagen. He played four or five of their group stage matches in the Europa League this year. Accomplished, think a player in the mold of Ilya Sanchez, more of a finesse number six, you would say. And I think that alone should start to help the middle of the park. Now, of course, they still need to do work defensively. They're still looking at goalkeepers, but the attack should still be able to fly with Ethan Finley and Kevin Molino coming back from injury, Abu Dhanladi coming back from injury, and Darwin Quintero, Romario Ibarra, Miguel Ibarra, all returning.
Jeff, we're going to get back to the players. I'll let Kevin jump in on that. Obviously, Alonso is the big name that's getting a lot of attention, and his health is the question, I guess, as you alluded to. But let's go back to the stadium again and just describe it. It looks stunning. I rarely say it about stadiums. Stadiums are stadiums, but this one absolutely looks amazing. So just talk it through where it is, what it's like, and what people that maybe visit it this year might be expecting there, having seen it yourself.
Sure. Well, it's directly off of Interstate 94. So it's very easy to get to from just about anywhere in the country, which is in itself a massive help. It's right off of a bunch of transit systems as well for people within the Twin Cities grid. So hopefully it won't be all automobile traffic. There's going to be some hundreds of bike racks as well. But if you look at the interior of it, it's very intimate. And I know that that's a word that architects love to throw out when they're describing a stadium, because stadiums are obviously these giant architectural marvels, and intimate implies that it's not just going to be a cookie box, right? But there's the first row of seats is feet, like single digit feet from the sidelines. The supporter section, the Wonder Wall, is going to be, I think, 18 to 20 feet behind the goalkeeper. So it's just going to be this incredible atmosphere. It might be yards on the goalkeeper one, as I'm quickly thinking about that. Yeah, yards. But it's such an incredible atmosphere that's going to be able to be built. It's so condensed. The field is raised. So the lower level is kind of looking directly across like an Old Trafford sort of field. The second level is built over the first. So instead of being a kind of a movie theater build, it is stacked seating, which means every single seat is that much closer, including the cheaper seats in the second deck. I think if I were a fan, I would actually be looking at those seats just because I don't like craning my neck necessarily. But there really isn't a bad seat in that house. And I would know because I actually did go into each and every single section to make sure that I could say that and not have some reader of The Athletics chiming at me saying that their seat sucks. So that is tremendous. The grass is natural grass grown in Wisconsin, shipped over. So there won't be issues in terms of odd bounces, ligament damage that you saw with the Loons temporary venue at the University of Minnesota over the last two seasons. I think it's a bit more modernized than Children's Mercy Park in Kansas City, which would probably be the stadium that it seems closest to. It has similar, it's the same architects, Populous, I think, did both of the designs. But overall, I haven't seen a soccer stadium quite like Allianz Field. It's still under 20,000 for its initial cap. It is expandable to, I think, 26,000 in the future, at least, comfortably, without trying to get into some sort of calisthenics. But I think that overall, it really is going to be one of the special soccer stadiums in North America, not just Major League Soccer.
Do you feel an excitement in the city, or in the cities in this case, in the Twin Cities, because of the stadium as well?
You feel one because of the stadium. I think there are other areas of the team where the fan base certainly doesn't sound excited, probably in particular with two of the key figures in the club hierarchy at the moment. But the stadium will do a lot to bring goodwill to a franchise that really does need it. It can't be stressed enough just how historically bad the defense has been over the last 2 years. Before the 2017 season, no team had ever allowed 70 goals in an MLS season, and Minnesota's done it twice. But they still don't hold the record for a single season because Orlando City found a way. So yeah. It's been a really rough road. It's worn a lot of just the initial, we have Major League Soccer in this market, finally. We felt like we could be one of the, you know, top 20 soccer markets in the city. Now we are in the country. Now we are. That's great. That's great. But they run into this brick wall, right? And it's, I think the new stadium certainly will help. Every season ticket holder will be re-energized by it. Every fan will be wanting to go back to the game, and every casual sports fan will want to check this team out again. So it really is, like you said, a hard launch at this point. Whether or not it was wise to make 2 years of a soft launch is a whole different discussion. But yeah, it is certainly bringing a much better feeling around the soccer fans in Minnesota from what I'm seeing.
Well, let's go to that discussion for a second, Jeff. We've talked about this a few years ago when we talked about the beginning of Minnesota United versus Atlanta United. Minnesota, since then, you mentioned two terrible seasons. Were there some damages done to the supporters base because of that soft launch?
Yeah, first of all, I will go ahead and say the Minnesota to Atlanta comparison just isn't worth making.
it's brothers, right?
Well, no, but I mean, it's someone. The Blanks had already gotten a semi-publicly funded stadium from an NFL perspective. There's the NFL income that's coming into it. The soccer thing is just kind of a side cash cow. That's completely different than trying to pay $400 million in a stadium fee and an expansion fee. Not the point. The point is, has it done some damage to the supporters in Minnesota? I think it's fair to say that it has. If it's not damage, it's certainly jaded them. I think it's pretty hard for me to go even 24 hours after putting out any article. I don't care what it's about. It could be about the stadium. It could be about the super draft. It could be about something that a Loon does in the community. And within 24 hours, I'm going to hear people say, well, great, why can't they win on the field? You know, or why, like if you say they went to this youth club or whatever, and a bunch of 10-year-olds were playing and they learned soccer from Miguel Ibarra. The first comment will be, is there a 10-year-old who can play center back? You know, like it's this kind of cynicism that gets exhausting on my end, because I have no skin in this, and so I can watch the team sleep at night just fine after they lose, things like that. So I do understand that it's a different level when you do have a fan's view of it, but it's pretty consistent at this point. There used to be smaller pockets that would make their barbs or whatever, but I think now they truly do want to see, what is Adrian Heath going to do to coach a defense differently? Mark Watson's back for a third year. It's the same assistant who's been there the last 2 years. So what's going to change? They want to see a goalkeeper who can distribute, because Bobby Shuttleworth has been one of the league's worst in that regard. They want to see a midfield actually, you know, show their studs once in a while and keep an opponent marching through in numbers. So, I think the first 2 years have made the fan base more cynical than the team probably realizes. But like you said, the new stadium, some of the new players they've already brought in, some of the new players they're looking at certainly could go a long way to making that just kind of a small chapter before a more promising future, I guess. I don't know.
I can tell you from personal experience, Jeff, that the third year of a team is exactly when those goodwill expansion vibes die out, because it's certainly when we saw it in Toronto and the struggle started to really get amped up. And unfortunately, in Toronto, it was several years until it got fixed. So I hope you don't have to go through that, because I wouldn't wish it upon my worst enemy. But although it's kind of funny.
If they do go through, you know, 7-9 years like that, I might have to find a new team cover.
Yeah, I mean, there were times, trust me. But Kevin tried to bring up the Atlanta comparison, and other than the fact they came in the league at the same time, you're right to say that there's just not a comparison there. But where there might be a comparison is the team that's coming in this year in Cincinnati, and they have a very unique sort of approach, bringing a lot of their USL guys up there, trying to do it smartly rather than expensively, so to speak. I'm wondering if you could look back on Minnesota's experience and their struggles in an expansion team and offer any suggestions or any insight into what Cincinnati's doing.
You're going to get me in a lot of trouble, Dwayne, with Cincinnati. There's this running meme that the fans have started, because I've written about Cincinnati a fair amount on The Athletic, that I often compare them to Minnesota because of the bump from a lower league to a major league, and they're kind of sick of hearing it. So let's dive right in and let's keep doing it, because it's fun. So I think if you're looking at what happened with Minnesota, I think that Minnesota... And maybe this falls more on Adrian Heath's shoulders just with the initial lineups. Always wanted to give precedence to the player who wasn't coming from the lower divisions, regardless of how they were playing and how they were training that day. I mean, you look at Vadim Demidov, who got a 3-game run out and then immediately was replaced by Brent Coleman, and the back line improved. I'm not going to say it was good, but it was better. You look at playing Johan Venegas as a striker in the team's first MLS game. Of course it didn't work. Within this, I think the 55th minute, they brought Christian Ramirez in front of Venegas, and lo and behold, Ramirez ended up scoring the first goal in franchise history. Miguel Ibarra wasn't really getting a runoff. And to be fair, he wasn't in the best shape for the majority of that first season, as he was transitioning from being a squad player, training with the U-17s at Club Lyon. But once he was working into the regular lineup, he was probably the team's most consistent player outside of Quintero last season. Ibsen ended up being the team's best midfielder for the 2017 season. These are guys who all came from the NASL. So if you're looking at Cincinnati, of course there's going to be... Alan Koch is probably going to look to start Mathieu Duplain, right? Who's a French right back who's played 7 years in Ligue 1, had just left Ligue 2. And he... he's a right back that they're going to try to convert to be a center back, most likely. But if Forrest Lasso is training harder, looking better, and matching up better alongside Kendall Waston, you have to play Forrest Lasso from match one. And I don't care what the fan base says about your signing over the first 4 weeks as he's sitting on the bench for your $300,000 or however much he costs a year, converted right back. It doesn't matter. If your team is going to be better with Forrest Lasso, you play Forrest Lasso. If your team's going to be better with Nazmi Al-Badawi instead of trying to force Darren Maddox in as a second striker, and instead you can have Al-Badawi as a number 10 and Fernando Adi playing in his best role as a single striker, perfect. Do that. It doesn't matter how much you're paying Darren Maddox at that point. Because if you're truly trying to show Cincinnati, which I've gotten the sense, their one goal this year, not to be Minnesota. If you look at all of their signings... defensive. They're holding midfielders. They're defensive midfielders. Their attack is probably the best attack in Major League Soccer right now. But they are going, they're diving in headfirst on this idea that if we can't be beaten down, we can win 1-0 games on the counter. Or our individual talent with Emmanuel Adesma, who I have my questions about if he'll translate from the USL. We can just spring one goal, bunker in. Teams will get frustrated. We'll see if it works. I think that they got a pretty fragile core on their back line between Greg Garza, who's already left a U.S. men's national team camp with an injury yesterday, and a couple of other players who have kind of spotted track records of injury. But I think overall the biggest lesson that they are clearly trying to learn is focus on your defense in your first year. And it seems to that end, that's where the majority of their energy has gone into this window.
Speaking of potentially fragile in back lines, let's talk about Alonso and that signing now. That's quite the segue, by the way, but I'm proud of myself. At any rate, how much do you think that realistically you can get out of him on what is clearly his final sort of punch at it, final sort of run at it?
Yeah, I mean, look, he's not going to be a best 11 player this year. I think that anyone who's going into Alonso in 2019, looking at it like that is sentimental, we'll say. But I think that if you're looking at what you could get out of him, 24, 25, 26 starts seems right. I think I'm setting the over-under in my column I put up this morning at The Athletic. I think I put it at 24.5, and I stand by that. Which means that there's still going to be probably 8 or 9 games where you have Rasmus Schuler back as a makeshift number 6. Or they bring in somebody else over the next 6 months who's going to be able to fill that role. But look, Ozzie Alonso, even at this age, even last season, was still a top-level number 6 in Major League Soccer. He wasn't the best. I don't think anyone would have tried to shoehorn him into their best 11s. I certainly didn't. But he's still going to be in that upper echelon, the top 8 at the position, which is much better than anything Minnesota United's had except for about 10 games of Sam Cronin before his concussions. And it sounds like he's making a good, healthy recovery. I don't know if he'll play again, but he's doing okay medically, which is the most important part. But if you look at Alonso, I would say, yeah, 25, 26 games, couple of assists, saves you 5-6 points purely by slowing down an opponent's number 10. And then most importantly, free up the new designated player, Slovakian international, to focus on being the connector, focus on making those deep lying passes that he loves, focus on shooting from deep, really doing more of that legwork, which would really help with his transition to Major League Soccer instead of forcing him to try to become a solo number 6 kind of player.
You mentioned Bobby Shuttleworth earlier, and there has been a rumor for the last week or so that an Argentinian goalkeeper, the name of Rossi, could be in the cards for Minnesota United. What can you tell us about this?
It's a much more complicated rumor than just soccer at this point. What I can say, and this is something that I do address this morning in The Athletic, so I do highly encourage anyone to go and check that out. Augustine Rossi started the first leg of the Copa Libertadores final for Boca Juniors. He's 23 years old. He started the majority of their regular season games as well. Reports have come out or resurfaced from 2016 saying that that year Rossi was the subject of a domestic violence claim from an ex-girlfriend who had posted pictures of bruises on her body, text messages that were apparently between her and Rossi. This was right before his move to Boca Juniors. He played 44 games for them in the past 2 seasons. The supporter section, the Wonderwall, which oversees the Dark Clouds, True North Elite, and all the other supporters groups. Sorry, I can never get them all right, so I just stick to those two. Issued a statement urging Minnesota United to reconsider this potential transfer. That's a quote, because they do not want anyone with accusations of domestic violence on the team. First, the team hasn't confirmed their interest at any point. I've heard the similar rumors that have been floating around from different areas, but the team never comes out and says that rumor's true, that rumor's false. You never get that sort of satisfaction from Minnesota United. So they haven't taken that step. They also haven't addressed the issue because, again, there's no public confirmation that they're looking at the player. If they are going to sign the player, of course they have to run a thorough investigation of his background. They have to speak to everyone involved. They have to speak to probably the authorities in Argentina. I don't know. But the big question is, Rossi would undoubtedly be one of the best goalkeepers in Major League Soccer. And at 23 years old, could be a player where if they do pick up that massive purchase option that'll be on his loan, they could really sell him on for a lot. But is it worth it with the kind of scrutiny that would come with bringing a player with fairly recent active domestic violence accusations around them and allegations? I'm just not sure. Personally, if it was me, I would just be looking for another goalkeeper, because I think you could find someone who is that top level MLS goalkeeper who doesn't have that kind of a character risk.
Different sport, but it reminds me a little of the Roberto Osuna situation in baseball. The Blue Jays here, it was a major story last summer, and they ended up moving away and not keeping him around Houston. Different story down there, and there was a lot of controversy on that move from some people in Houston. But yeah, it's always sort of complicated and a very serious story, and we're glad that at least these issues are getting noted now. On a slightly, on a much less serious note, I did promise our Canadian Premier League listeners, our Canadian Premier League fan listeners out there, that I would ask you about Bertrand Awoundé. Can you tell us a little bit about the player that made one appearance in a friendly for Minnesota United last year and will now be a Hamilton Forge?
Got it. So Bertrand Awoundé's best position probably will be at center back. He could get shoehorned at left back as a very, very oversized left back. He's surprisingly mobile for his size as well, I will say that. He's incredibly strong. He's raw, I think would be the most fair way to describe him. He's a player who looks like he could become a top-level defender, and I think this is what Minnesota United ultimately went after when they signed him last year. But in training, the ball hit off of his foot clumsily into the path of attackers. He wasn't able to quite string together the passing that you need to do as a modern center back. I think he's a little bit more of a project. He went on loan for 5 or 6 games to Charlotte Independence. I'm trying to remember if they're still in the second division or if they moved down to the new third division of the USL. But that was much more of his level, I think, that kind of second, third division from the MLS hierarchy. Could he start? Sure, but you better have one of the most no-nonsense center back partners that you can imagine standing right next to him. You might want someone like a Nick Ledgerwood in front of him. I'm just kind of trying to think of like what types of players would bring out the best in him. If he's able to do more of the mobile stuff and have a security net, if he's making some of those rookie mistakes, if you will, because he really essentially will be coming to Hamilton Forge as a rookie, you would want to make sure you surround him with veterans who know how to do their jobs and do their partners' jobs as well.
Jeff, to finish the show, I was going to ask you about what makes you excited for the 2019 MLS season outside of Minnesota, but just in your answer right there, I noticed a lot of knowledge for the Canadian Premier League out of you in Minnesota. What is your thought on the Canadian Premier League?
Look, man, anytime a new league pops up in North America, I'll give it a time of day. I did an interview with NISA's president, Bob Watkins. I'll look into the NPSL Pro. More teams is always good. More leagues that are putting out a quality product, that are well-run, that are engaging with the local communities of their teams is always a good thing. Always is. Unilaterally. Now, if it loses money, if it harms players, then of course you need to tweak it. The NASL wasn't working because it wasn't playing its players on times in the case of some clubs, or its owners weren't living up to some of their promises. Fair enough. But then you find something else. And I think the Canadian Premier League is going to do a fantastic job of developing what really does look like one of the most promising generations. This is just from the outside, but one of the most promising generations of Canadian talent possibly ever. I mean, the obvious names stand out when you look at the Jonathan Davids, you look at the Alfonso Davies, but if you're going beyond that, the reason that the U.S. talent pool is deep, obviously it's pretty thin, it's narrow in terms of its quality, but it's deep just in terms of the number of players who you could theoretically throw into a U.S. men's national team camp. And a lot of that has come from not just MLS, but USL, giving some of these players who weren't standouts at 15 chances to develop and grow and become the Jamie Vardys of the world, the Chris Smallings of the world, what have you. So I think the Canadian Premier League is doing a great job. Look, Canada only has, what, 3 teams in Major League Soccer and currently 1 team. Ottawa is still allowed to play in the USL, right? So
yeah.
So that's not enough for a country that's as large, as populated, and frankly, as sports interested as Canada is. I think it was silly to think that even five when FC Edmonton was in existence, it was silly to think that that was enough to really develop the game in Canada. So I think the CPL is doing a great job filling that role. And it's way too early to tell how it's going to be as far as quality goes. So
before Kevin wraps it up, I just wanted to, you know, thank you. That's a great answer. And it's exactly what I say to Canadians. What we should be focused on is producing an Alan Gordon up here in the early days of this, a player like that, that had just a cup of coffee down there, but just pushes the whole level up a little bit more for those elite players and helps that next generation. Like, well, we don't have that right now. And that's what this league hopes to do. Gets very excited. 4 months to go. All right. Thanks, Jeff. I'll let Kevin wrap now.
Sounds good. Yeah, no problem.
Jeff Rutter of The Athletic. If you like Jeff's words, imagine reading them on a daily basis on theathletic.com. Jeff, thank you very much for your time today.
Yeah, not a problem. You can follow me on Twitter at Jeff Rutter, R-U-E-T-E-R. So thanks for having me.
And we'll be right back after this short break.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at Soccer Today SPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/ Sports Podcasting Network. You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.
And we're back on Soccer Today. I'm Kevin Laramie, of course, and Dwayne Rollins is there as well. Dwayne, when we look at players, Canadian players playing, there might be a debut today.
Yeah, right now looking at this is basically the Alphonso Davies network at this particular point in time, and that'll slide off a little bit, but 2:30 p.m. Eastern time on Sportsnet, nationally broadcasted across this country. I haven't seen a lineup yet. I've been looking for it. I suspect he'll start on the bench, but we'll hope to see him out there sooner rather than later. It's certainly the most attention that a Bayern Munich game has gotten in Canada
ever.
In a long time.
When was the last
ever.
Time the Bundesliga was on the main channel of Sportsnet? First of all, is Bayern Munich aware of that? And was it one of the strategies? Like, okay, let's gather a bigger fan base in Canada. So let's get the Canadian Wonder Kid, and then we'll be on the main channels everywhere in Canada.
Well, look, it's, you know, in South Korea, Spurs is incredibly popular right now because of Sun, right? There's famously someone took a screen capture of it, a photograph of the TV, that rather than the Spurs logo, they had Sun's name beside it while they were showing the Spurs games, but they played them all live in the middle of the night over there. So I don't know if we're quite like that here. Our culture's a little different, but I could certainly see that if he does regularly start in you know, next year, and considering especially the TV market and the losing the other properties, that every Bayern Munich game will give him front and center and be front line of the news. This is why it's game-changing if he starts down there, because it will just put the image of the sport. It will change the image of the sport in Canadians' minds, and they will start to believe that Canadians could succeed at the level. I complained on Twitter this morning, Kevin, that we keep calling him Ghana-born Alphonso Davies, and it's time to drop that.
No, he's from Canadian. Doesn't matter if you're born here or you're emigrated here. You got the passport, you're Canadian in my book.
Well, yeah, and I mean, from a football perspective, he first kicked the ball here. He learned the game here. He went through his youth clubs here, and he turned professional here. There's no more, like, there's no debate about where this kid was framed, where he was formed, right? And now Bayern Munich will take the rough, you know, the rock, and may hopefully turn it into a diamond. And that's what we hope for here. But this is not someone like, you know, Jonathan de Guzman in the past that arguably was Dutch more than he was Canadian when he made the decision to go with the Dutch. Right? This is not the situation that we're talking about here, and it's time to sort of embrace that. But, yeah, we do need to put the brakes on a little bit, I think. And I think most people are. I put a poll out this morning on Twitter as well, asking how often we expected him to start. And, you know, although I'm obviously getting answers from all over the world, my followers are mostly in Canada and the United States, and most people think that he's going to be either a regular sub or a guy that plays in the cup competitions and occasionally gets, like, Phil Foden-type runouts in the 85th minute, right? So that's where I had to get a city reference.
We'll see.
In there. But
if he plays 5 minutes today and scores 2 goals, well, Kovac got to start him. You know, we'll see how the kid handles being given an opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, he's exceeded expectations at every step. He really has. When he first signed professionally, people said, oh, you know, because we've done the hype. Like, I talked about Alfonso Davies for the first time with Ben Rycroft on our show. That's how long ago.
Jeez.
Kevin and I have been doing this.
It's almost impossible. Was he like eight?
I think he was 12 the first time we talked about him, because we'd heard about this kid out of Edmonton that was going to be crazy. And we had a conversation, asked about him to someone up there. And you and I have been talking about the entire time. But anyway, the point I'm making is when he turned professional, people said, yeah, it's great, but we got to be realistic about his opportunities here. It's not like he's going to be playing in MLS anytime soon. Well, at 15, he was playing in MLS. And scoring.
You know what I thought you were going to say? I thought you were going to say people were saying, yeah, he's good now, but can he play on both sides of the ball? Can he be defensively responsible?
Yeah. Well, everything. All along the way, everyone said, yeah, but.
I think
we said this last week. It's time to drop the yeah, but with him. Like, he's here. He's in Bayern Munich. Even if he is playing 5 minutes a game at the end of games and playing in the cup, he's at Bayern friggin' Munich. It's not like this kid's, and he's 18. So let's just sit back and enjoy this ride, because there's never been a Canadian player with this much potential, period, end of story. And as Jeff said, and outsiders are taking note, this is a very interesting, pretty narrow, not very deep, defensively questionable, although Vancouver signed a son, Canales, so that's a good, that he's going to get time at a higher level. A lot of hope on that kid. But but this is a very interesting attacking presence. People were asking me yesterday, Kevin, whether Endo, TFC's Endo, the Japanese player, because he's trying to get his permanent residency here. That's for a TFC perspective, so they can put him on his domestic board. They're going, oh, you know, do you think he could play for the Canadian national team? And 5 years ago, that would have been all people were talking about. The answer is probably not, extremely probably not, because it takes forever to get it.
And he's
the
not
other
good
part
enough.
Of it makes that probably not. Yeah, he's not probably good enough. And that's in 5 years, I hope no one asked the question. I had one person ask it yesterday. I hope no one asked it in 5 years, because one would be asking in these.
Oh, sorry. I was going to say, remember when we used to say Cap Camilo when he was a Vancouver player? That was like 5 years ago.
Yeah. Just quickly, folks, it is next to impossible for a player to come into a Canadian system from being non-Canadian and eventually be here long enough that they become a Canadian international. They would have to come here at 17, 18 and stay till they're 30. Like, that may be in that situation, but like, what scenario is that happening, right?
Yeah,
so just get that in your mind.
And we'll keep an eye on this today, of course. We'll talk about Davies' debut. The Davies debut, that's a mouthful, on Monday, of course. But, Dwayne, before we wrap up for the weekend, before we wrap our Friday up, the Montreal Impact yesterday signed an extension for Maximiliano Urruti, or Max Urruti, the French-Canadian version, Maxim Urruti. We're going to call him Maxim. So Maxim yesterday signed an extension with 3 years and a player and a club option. And, you know, the more and more we hear him talk about his arrival in Montreal, the more and more we talk about him being excited to play with Piatti. And he's like, I wouldn't mind if I'm being put back as a striker, as a pure number nine. I would love it, and I would love to play that role with Piatti. So maybe Montreal did get their long-awaited striker. Just you have to replace a guy who's playing in a different position, put him as a nine, and hopefully you get what you want. Which is gold, by the way.
Yeah, Rudy, clearly the biggest and most high-profile switch between the two rivals for this offseason, Rudy, TFC legend, Rudy, played 19
via,
minutes.
Via Portland, via Dallas, and then to Montreal. Hey, he won the MLS Cup in 2015. Let's not forget, Rudy was the most important player with Diego Valeri in 2015 for Portland, so.
Yeah, look, I'll say this about Urruti. I think it's a smart signing by Montreal. And although he's not who you would think of as a quote-unquote MLS lifer, that's kind of what he is. The biggest portion and most successful part of his career has been in MLS, and he's just signed a four-year contract extension for the Impact. This is not a guy that's probably going to go anywhere else. This is, although not a domestic player, this is a guy that is going to spend the bulk of his career in Major League Soccer and has already spent a good portion and won titles and been on good teams, won the Supporters' Shield as well with Dallas. We should mention that.
And the U.S. Open Cup in the same year, in 2016, got the double, so...
Yeah, so this is not our prototypical MLS lifer, but I would put that label on at this point.
Yeah, I agree.
This is a solid pickup for the Montreal Impact.
It's not an American MLS lifer, but he's an MLS lifer. And, you know, Montreal do need some of those. And I think it's a positive move for Montreal. We'll see if the rest of the moves work. And it'll be interesting to see how the teams look, starting with the training camps next week for most of the team, and then we'll see some exhibition games. And, you know, before you know it, it's going to be March 2nd, and the season's going to start.
Yeah, my head is already on a swivel right now. It's like I'm talking about the Canadian Premier League. Oh, wait, I'm talking about Bayern Munich. Oh, wait, I'm talking about the Premier League. Oh, wait, I'm talking about MLS trees. It's like crazy right now. This is probably... ironically, the busiest time of the season, because there's so much to evaluate and think about. When the MLS season's cruising along, it's just game, kind of getting the routine. But right now, it's kind of fun. It's like, this is my ADHD comes out this time of year, because I got to look at this, then I got to look at this.
Oh, there's a squirrel. Oh. And you have Premier League games mixed in between, and you have Cup games mixed in between, and European games. Bundesliga starts today, then the Champions League is going to start in about 2 weeks. So, no, it is a busy period, but we love it. We love the sport. And today, 2:30 p.m., do not look for me. I'll be in front of my telly to look at Bayern Munich and Alphonso Davies' debut, hopefully. But before we say goodbye for this week, Dwayne, Zulily. What the heck is Zulily? Do you know what Zulily is?
Yeah, because I looked it up yesterday. It's one of those things that makes you spend money when you're on your phone on the commute home. It's a discount online retailer.
Oh, yeah, those things that it seems too good to be true, and usually they are.
Yeah, look, if you want to go look up this drama, a lot of it was just Portland-Seattle banter going back and forth, because it's not the most, you know, they went from Xbox to this, and it's a shirt sponsor for the Seattle Sounders. Yeah. We should back up a little bit here. Not everyone might be aware of this, but, I mean, the design is not maybe as... adolescent male cliched, you know, cisgendered and so on and so forth, as you might have expected Xbox to be. So there were certain people that were crossing sort of bad taste the lines and going that way with it. But, you know, there were other people that were being more critical of the fact that it is kind of a bit of a dodgy company. But this is MLS. They've had, you know, legitimate pyramid schemes on the shirts before.
Herbalife, is it still? I think it's still on the Galaxy's jersey, no? Herbalife? Is
yeah,
it still?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Well, that's a dodgy schemes. Company.
Pyramid-like schemes. Yeah. At any rate, they're direct marketers, I believe is what they call it, without getting into legal problems. So, yeah, this is not a league that has been particularly – the Canadian teams are pretty lucky. We have banks and, you know, telecoms on our jerseys. So
I'm still waiting for the first MLS team to have Wish. You know, Wish.com, that Chinese – cheaply made stuff that you have to wait 5 weeks for.
Do I know Wish.com? Yes, I picked up the mail. I know Wish.com.
Well, imagine. I can't wait to see. Well, I don't really want to, because it's not necessarily good quality. It's not a good company, and it's taking jobs away from local retailers. But Wish.com is going to be a sponsor before we know it in Major League Soccer. And those similar type of company. It's unfortunate. It's a global game now, and everyone's trying to find their edge. And I guess being on the shirt is their edge. So I guess Zulily have found their edge.
Just a real one half serious point on this. First off, who cares? The second off, the financial world, it's apparently a bigger, like Xbox knows they have the Seattle Sounders like hanging over a ledge. Like they're just happy to have such a high profile kind of, you know, great name. Microsoft out there as well. And I'm not just saying that because I get a paycheck from Microsoft at the moment, but you know, it was a high end sort of shirt sponsor. They weren't getting a lot of money for it.
Exactly.
And they got more money for this deal. And they also tied it into the Rain, the NWSL team in Seattle as well, got the shirt sponsorship. So it's a dual deal. So it works out for the Sounders on that level. I, you know, fans are right to question the ethics of certain companies. This is not an ethical company. It's just kind of a down market company. So complain about that if you want. What you can't complain about, though, is the fact that it's too girly, which I've seen out there, and that's just silly and belongs in 1819, not 1919 or 2019.
I don't know where you live. I don't know when you're living, but it's 2019 here, not 1919.
Yeah.
And on that note, I guess we'll let Dwayne go back to 1919, use his time stone, and go back to his steam-powered trains. And until then, you can follow him on Twitter at 24th Minute, myself at Kev Laramie, and the show at Soccer Today SPN. Thanks to our guest today, Jeff Rotter. You can follow him on social media at Jeff Rowder, and you can read his work on Minnesota and on Major League Soccer on the subscription-based The Athletic. Just a few pennies a month will give you access to great independent sports journalism across all different sports markets in North America, and Jeff covers soccer and more on theathletic.com. Until Monday, as always, have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.